Hi, welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buchholz, and today we are joined by Bobby Chu. Welcome.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, it's so great to have you here. Like, I'm really excited that we were able to get you in from Toronto, have you come visit LA.
It's an absolute pleasure to come here, and only for you guys.
Well, hey, I love having you here. So I want to start off with some rapid-fire questions.
Sure.
All right. Hope you're ready.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk or steampunk?
Cyberpunk? I'm not, you know, partial to either, actually.
What's your favorite season?
Fall.
Favorite shape to start a character design with?
Probably a circle.
If you had the ability to be any height, how tall would you be?
I would be 6 feet. I'm not 6 feet.
Neither am I. Sweet or savory?
Savory, generally.
Morning or night person?
Morning. I used to be a night person, though.
It's weird how that changes, right?
Well, not necessarily. I used to live with a whole bunch of artists in one house, and it was great because anytime you wake up, there's always somebody drawing or painting, and everybody would stay up till like 5 in the morning. And then I was like, I really wanted to have time alone to just paint my stuff alone without questions and everything. So then I started getting up at 5 in the morning.
You worked the system.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a nickname?
A few.
Any ones that you enjoyed?
They're all embarrassing. They're all embarrassing. But I guess you probably want to know some now.
Yeah.
So there was Fun Bobby, and that was from college days.
How is Fun Bobby embarrassing? You could have been Boring Bobby, and I think that would have been much worse.
Yeah, true. Well, it was from, I guess, how I was in college, plus that show Friends, Fun Bobby.
Gotcha.
And then also, this one is the embarrassing one. Digital Bobbert or Digi, because back in the day, this is like, I don't even know when this was, maybe late 90s. I was like, I'll call myself Digital Bobbert because I'm special. I do digital art. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense.
All right. Would you rather live in the country or the city?
Right in the middle,
I think.
Right in between. I could go to both.
If you could have any animal companion.
I don't know why, but I first thought of a koala bear because they're all, you know, they need some homes.
And 3 words that describe you.
Honest, determined, dedicated.
Nice. Those are great choices.
Thanks.
All right. Now that we've got the rapid fire out of the way, let's talk about you.
Okay.
So you started creating really early.
Yes.
And you started working professionally around 17, right?
Yes. There's actually a lesson in there because I got a job at this toy company in their warehouse, right? Like moving boxes around, things like that. But on my off time, I would spend it in the little art department that they had learning this new software called Illustrator. And I think Photoshop 2 or 3, the layers option just came out. You know, and one day I brought in some toys from the warehouse and they were all running around like crazy in the art department. I said, do you guys need help? I've been learning some stuff. Can I help? And the person that was teaching me, you know, turned to the art director and said, yeah, let him try. You know, I've been teaching him some stuff. And then after that, they moved me into the art department, right? So lesson from there is like, ask for what you want.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's a pretty huge step going from moving boxes to working in the art department.
Right. And actually that job, I was doing, you know, Batman toys, Star Wars toys, Pixar toys, things like that. And I would get these style guides and that's what got me really interested in movies. I wanted to be on the other side of that whole entire process.
You wanted to be the one creating how everything looks.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And so that led the way into the concept design and character design and...
Actually, at that time, you know, we were talking previously about how some careers can be very windy.
Yeah.
You know, and mine was extremely windy. It's a bit of a longer answer. But is that all right?
Let's follow that road, yeah.
Okay, so this is a really good one for any, especially any artists out there that feel that struggle. You know, I've always loved art. And my parents always loved the fact that I loved art, but they were always like, you know, your art is great as a hobby. okay, become a business person, a lawyer, a doctor, whatever, and do art on the side. So I believed them, and I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And I went to business school, even after landing my first art job, you know, as a teenager. I still went to business school. I hated it. But I went there because when I asked, could I be an artist, my parents said no. Okay. Dropped out of business school because I was just bringing paints and pastels into like math class and accounting. I only went to one exam, painted a cat, and I left. I obviously failed. So then my parents got the report card and saw E's, right? And my mom's like, I'm confused. What does this mean? Does that mean excellent? And I said, no, Mom, it means I failed. And she said, well, I hope you know what you're doing, because now I guess you're going to art school. I said, heck yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to find the hardest art school within my budget and things like that that I can attend. And that was Sheridan College for animation. I applied, and did I get in? No, I didn't get in, right? So it's like, I'll show you, and then I didn't show you. So I went to Art Fundamentals, which you can get in pretty much without a portfolio or anything. But the thing was that the top people can get into animation afterwards. So I got there, I busted my hump and got to that top 5% and got in. Graduated 2002. So I started the year with 9/11. Doors closed everywhere in the entertainment industry. So then all of a sudden, I couldn't get a job when I graduated. Well, that's okay, because I applied for computer animation. That is the post-grad that is supposed to lead me to my ultimate goal of being a computer animator. Why? I don't like animating, but I didn't know, you know? I just thought that that was the thing. But then did I get in? No, I got rejected. So I went back to my old toy company, then applied again, got in. Told you this is a long story.
I'm loving it.
You know, so I worked my butt off there, graduated at the top of my class again, and I graduated at the top of my class every time. But then again, I couldn't get a job. The only job I could get was a data manager at this place called Nelvana. Lovely people, but I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. So at night, I would do freelance for like the smallest, any kind of job that I could get. And most of them I got off of my DeviantArt account, by the way. So thank you guys for that. That was amazing. Got my name out there. But, you know, as an artist, it can be a long road. And it was, especially for me. So I kept doing all these little jobs until I was working 8 hours at night, working 8 hours in the day at the studio, and something had to give. I quit my job, and then that night I go home to turn on my computer to start my career as a freelance artist, finally. And then would my computer turn on? No, it actually broke that day. And it wasn't an easy fix. It was the sound going, work, work.
Oh, the
that's my hard drive. And were there flash drives at the time? No, there were writable DVDs for $60 where I was. Which means that you can only write it one time. So did I have anything backed up? No. I lost everything, my whole portfolio, the day that I turned freelance full time. Right? So a lot of people, they could see this as going, okay, well, you know, get the clue, Bobby. Life is telling you that you shouldn't be an artist.
Yeah, you had every roadblock.
Right? And then I realized, I was like, it's like we need that push against us so that we can get stronger and be more determined and all that kind of stuff. And once I realized that, then everything kind of turned around. And every time I see a no, it's really just this test that life is giving me going, okay, how badly do you want this? Because if you really, really want it badly, be positive, keep moving forward, and then life will reward you. And if it throws another brick in your face, it just means that the prize is even better. Just stay positive and keep going, because with the attitude, it can change a lot of things.
Yeah, it seems like every step of that way was just escalated, which is kind of a crazy story that like every time it was bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right. And like everything is telling me no. And if I followed that, then I never would have accomplished much of anything. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the entire thing. A lot of people, they might feel like they don't have opportunities, but perhaps a lot of times it's because of how they react to situations that closes or opens opportunities.
Yeah, I think that that's a really great point, is when you do get that feedback, whether it's a complete no or whether it's even something as simple as a critique, taking that learning from it and really being inspired by that versus shutting down on it.
Yeah, yeah. It's happened so many times now that I don't even hear no. I just hear not right now, you know, and I come back and I'll try again in a different way, a different approach. And I am a firm believer in the idea of, if you can say in your heart of hearts that you are willing to take 10 horrible rejections before you get a yes, then you will never get 10 horrible rejections. You will have a yes way before that.
So it sounds kind of like you were already knowing where you were going to succeed versus worrying about the no's.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Matt, because I don't even know if I knew that I was going to succeed. I was pretty sure that that if I just think this way, it doesn't matter if I'm going to succeed or not. It matters that I try. So at least like years from now, if I didn't succeed, I could be like, well, I got no regrets. I tried my best.
That's really cool. And so from there, we're at the part where you've lost your hard drive.
Yes.
No portfolio anymore. And you're full-time freelance, so.
Oh, yeah. So so a little caveat here. 2 weeks before that, I emailed two artistic heroes of mine, right? One was this person, Dean Yeagle, mm-hmm. and another one, Steven Silver. And Dean Yeagle, and I wrote to them going, you know, I'm really trying here. I love your stuff, and I'm trying to be an artist, and nothing's really gelling. So I'm like thinking, am I delusional? I really respect your opinion. And if you tell me to maybe choose something else, I will appreciate that. I won't be upset. I just want an honest answer from a professional that I admire. And so Dean Yeagle, he wrote back and he said, keep going. You're doing great. You know, and Steven Silver, he wrote back and he said, give me your number. I want to call you. And this is before Skype and all that. So, you know, long distance is pretty expensive. So did he call? Remember our theme of these stories? No, he didn't call, right? So then I quit my job. Now I'm looking at my computer, it's broken. I felt sorry for myself for a little bit, and now I realize this is just another one of life's tests. As soon as I realized that, I kid you not, my phone rang. Who was on the line? It was Steven Silver. You know, I won't try to imitate his voice. I can't do his accent too well, but he said, you know, hey, is this Bobby? And I was like, hey, yeah, it is. You know, this is Steven Silver. You emailed me. And I was like, oh my goodness. You know, and he started talking to me about what really connected with him were the words in my email. He could sense the passion. He could sense the determination, that kind of thing. And the honesty, it wasn't necessarily the art, right? And he said, that's what will elevate you to the level that you want to get to. It's not where you are right now in terms of your skills, even though it's not bad. It's your attitude that will determine how far you'll go. And you got it, so keep going. You got to keep going, you know? And he was talking to me for over an hour.
Wow.
Long distance. And at the end of this, I go, you know, today you changed my life. How could I ever repay you? And he said to me, well, when it comes to a point when you can change, help somebody else and change their lives, do that and we'll call it even, right? How cool is that?
That's pretty cool. Like, that's one of the lines you hear in like a movie.
Yeah. So as soon as I started to get any kind of notoriety, I started teaching people for free on the subways of Toronto. If you come and meet me on Sunday, 3:30, at this station, at this platform, I'll teach you for free. I'm gonna be drawing on the subways. I started doing that for about 5 years. And then from there, it caught on online. And people started making their own subway sketch groups, Paris subway sketch group, Istanbul, and they would all call it the Bobby Chu subway sketch group. And that got my name out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want me to keep going.
Please, I'd love to hear more about it. So when you're doing the subway sketch groups, is that like live drawing based off of people that you're seeing?
Yes. And that was so much fun because I don't know if you've ever done any of that, like sketch people on the bus or the subway. It can be intimidating, especially if they catch you and they're like, what's that weirdo doing? But when you're there with like 12 people and you all have sketchbooks, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is a fun class trip or something. They're cool.
Yeah.
You know? So it was really, it worked really well for that aspect.
And then to see it going global with your name has got to be pretty exhilarating.
That was interesting. You know, but what was really great was I start to get calls for jobs all over the world. And I know it's because of the Subway Sketch Group. So, you know, try to do something that's good for the planet, good for the art community. And if it's a great idea, you'll be rewarded somehow, you know? So, like, you don't necessarily have to think about how is this going to work out financially for me or things like that. I try to start off with what would be great just, you know, as an artist. And that's kind of led every decision, every kind of big project that we've done.
Very cool. With that in mind too, you were kind of taking something that you already enjoyed of the live sketching and mm-hmm. applying it to a broader spectrum and getting to share that joy with other people.
Yeah. So what also happened was I start to see how wanted the knowledge was. And then I had, this is back when blogs started coming up and everything, and you'd see all these artists from, mostly from California actually, and they're doing all these things where I was just like, wow, how do you do that? And it was almost like peering over the fence and not being allowed over. And on a trip to San Diego Comic-Con, I pitched a bunch of artists, starting with Steven Silver, the idea of teaching on this new platform called Schoolism, right? Where they would teach what they know, and I would be there to make sure that all the content is very understandable and things like that. In other words, I'm learning for free. and I'm able to kind of give people access to this that were in situations like mine where we didn't have California in our, you know, backyard kind of thing, right? And those kind of resources.
So when you started Schoolism then, what sort of impact did you see like right from the start? Was it something where people immediately caught on and they were really into it?
I'm an artist. At that time, I think I was working on, maybe I was working on Alice in Wonderland with Tim Burton at that time. Mm-hmm. I forget, but I was a working artist and I had this little Schoolism thing on the side and it just kept catching on more and more and more. And before I knew it, without even trying really, it eclipsed the studio, right? And then went way past the studio. That was really interesting because again, it was like, I didn't think about it from any kind of financial point of view. Just like the subway sketching, I didn't think, you know, oh, I'm gonna get all these jobs from subway sketching.
And then you ended up having such a huge impact for so many people.
Yeah, so now, you know, 14 years later or whatever, Schoolism is over 100,000 people in our community.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you get to still go through and see all of the impact that you've made throughout all of those users.
Yes. And that one little caveat here is also when I started Schoolism, this is before Facebook, right? As far as I know, there was no other online school anywhere. So then I figured I'd make one. And there's something to be said about that, because anybody could have did that. And it's really about sometimes you're not looking for opportunity, you're trying to create an opportunity if there's no opportunities there.
And that kind of goes back to your very start of working and moving boxes and finding that opportunity in the art department.
Exactly. You know, it's another one of those things where it's like, some people might say, oh, there were lots of opportunities around you. And then some people would say, there were zero opportunities around you. And I feel like that's like that for most people. And the ones that might feel down about their situation, they just don't see the opportunities that other people would see.
What sort of advice or insight would you give to people who maybe feel like they don't have those opportunities? Like, what sort of lens would they look through to see the opportunities that they might be able to find for themselves personally?
You just got to keep searching. Like, one, just the other day, I was doing this stream on my YouTube channel, and this person called in, and she's 20, lives in the UK, wants to work in animation, doesn't feel confident about it at all, doesn't feel like she has any advantage. I was like, you have an amazing advantage. You know this, right? Like, you remember how it is to be a child absorbing children's entertainment far clearer than I can. And that's a huge advantage. Another huge advantage is maybe you are the next wave of artists, right? The next generation. Styles come and go. And for me, my disadvantage that I thought I had was that I lived far away from the hub, which I would say is California. But what I didn't know was I had a huge advantage, which was this handicap that forced me to really understand the internet, how to get my art out there, like through things like DeviantArt and things like that. I was one of the first adopters, I would say, you know, it's like 13 years ago, I think, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, so being in that situation actually became a huge advantage when most of us would look at it going, okay, yeah, that's a disadvantage.
And now I have to ask, have you always had the same username on DeviantArt for those 13 years?
Yes, I share it with Kay Asadera, who is my partner in business and in life. She's awesome. And it's both of our art on there.
That's really cool. And now your newest project is actually Lightbox.
Yes, yes. Now this one is great because it brings everything, it kind of completes the circle, okay? Schoolism is all about knowledge. How do you mm-hmm. become a great artist? Through knowledge. But okay, now you have the knowledge, you don't have a job. Well, we need to make a place where all the artists can meet, all of the studios, as well as other creative people, and hopefully great things will happen. And that became Lightbox, right? So Lightbox was actually an idea that was around before I started doing traveling workshops, because I've been traveling around the world doing workshops everywhere for over 10 years. And the whole entire idea was to create an event where it's the ultimate artist-focused event, where there's a pilgrimage every year to come to this event, right? But then that would take global marketing, global awareness, and global marketing is a giant black hole where you just throw your money in and you don't expect nothing back. So then we're like, okay, well, we can't afford that. But maybe we can start doing workshops in various countries, and we'll just go sell some tickets or whatever, and then at the same time create awareness of us. So when the time comes, we can do this big giant event and have the world know. So yeah, the year before Lightbox happened, I went to 23 countries.
Wow.
In 1 year, yeah.
That is intense. That's like a country every other week.
I was gone out of my home more than a third of the time.
Wow.
But I, you know, I'm dedicated,
yeah,
right?
You survived.
I work hard, right?
We got you here.
Exactly. So it was so worth it. Yeah, being there, it was so freaking worth it. And seeing the event happen the way that it did is awesome.
We were really excited. A lot of the DeviantArt staff got to attend and enjoy Lightbox this year. We did a little live stream through the whole artist section.
Fantastic.
And waved at everyone. And it was so cool seeing an event like that where I'm used to more fan-driven cons from like my history of like even San Diego Comic-Con or Anime Expo. It's about the fandom around those things, around comic books or anime. And to be at Lightbox where it was about art gave such unique conversations as you were walking around.
Absolutely. And you've been to a bunch of events, right?
Yeah.
So the vibe of Lightbox, though, it was different, mm-hmm. I felt it was like way warmer. It felt like a community as opposed to this is an event to make money or something like that. And everybody kind of felt that. That's the biggest difference between, I think, between an artist-organized artist event than, say, somebody that specializes in creating conventions for, you know, kitchenware and art and whatever else, right?
Yeah. What I loved, too, is the, like you said, the overall vibe was just, like, so special. And the sense of community, because the artist community is very tight, I feel, online.
For sure.
And you hear those conversations of people talking, and I met this person online, or I saw this art on DeviantArt or anywhere else on the internet, and I loved it, and I've started talking with this person. But Lightbox was a real opportunity for a lot of those people to meet for the first time, too. Where I saw so many people over the course of time saying, oh, yeah, I got to meet this person for the first time. It was my first chance to get to meet Lois Van Barrel, who was a huge inspiration of mine forever.
DeviantArt juggernaut.
Yeah, and that was super cool.
Yeah. Well, and she's such a nice person as well, which is always great to find out, you know, especially the people that we might look up to. Yeah, that event, it was special in so many ways, but also we had this thing where we would have this artist database and have people upload their portfolios, their information, and then all the big studios, because pretty much all the big studios were sponsors, Pixar, Weta Workshops, Riot, Disney, you name it. And they all got access to the artist database so that they can arrange scheduled meetups with these people that were coming there. You know, a lot of times when you're looking at portfolios, you look at the very first page and you know this person isn't somebody you want to hire. So it can be very time consuming to try to find the people that you want to meet. Well, our mission is to help companies find these artists, you know, so we can all get jobs and such. And it worked out brilliantly. You know, there was over 250 some odd meetups within the very first Lightbox, and a bunch of people, you know, got jobs from it, and that really
that's the other crazy thing too, is this was the first Lightbox.
Yes.
And for it to be as impactful as it was on
10,000 people
on its first iteration is incredible.
That just goes to show to me as well, it really showed me that trying to be a good person and trying to think about doing good things will pay off in the end. I didn't plan on it paying off. That's just something I kind of believe in. But through all these years, like teaching people on a subway for 5 years, you know, even on my birthday, I would go. If it's a Sunday, I would go. Not thinking about anything in return. All these people, they wanted to pay back. And when Lightbox came around, they had the opportunity to, and that was just attending, you know? And then they got something out of it as well, so it's great. There was actually two wedding proposals there.
Two wedding proposals?
Yes, at Lightbox.
Did both go well?
Yes.
That's good.
But it just goes to show the vibe of the whole entire thing, the energy behind it.
And kind of looping back onto something that you hit really quickly was you're talking about a convention made by artists for artists too.
Yes.
And you have a really great like advisory council that works with you to help make sure that Lightbox has the correct direction.
Yeah. You know, something that I feel very strongly in is to especially if you're somebody that's in charge of something, surround yourself with good people that are not afraid to tell you that what you're saying, it doesn't make sense to them. They don't believe that, those kind of things. If you constantly surround yourself with those kind of people, it'll keep you honest and it'll keep the boat going in the right direction. So that's why we have the advisory council.
And it's fun to know, like, your mentality of looking for those good people that will keep you honest and that work hard are all those same people that you look and you say, like, wow, they're art, though. You know, so you're kind of surrounding yourself not only with people who are amazing artists, but also have that same drive that you do and that same quality that makes people really enjoy you and what you do and your mission.
Yeah, I think that was just a natural thing, you know, like-minded people kind of gravitate towards each other, perhaps. I don't know.
So what are you excited about for next year coming for Lightbox?
Just seeing everybody there. We have a lot of really awesome surprises coming to Lightbox. It's really kind of like the Disneyland for artists. That's what I heard somebody quote or whatever. I was like, wow, yeah, it kind of is. To me, it was like, it felt like almost like a wedding where it was just like pure positive energy and everybody's just so happy. But it revolved around art. You know, people can expect to find all of, you know, pretty much most of their favorite artists behind their favorite things. A lot of times we love things so much, yet we don't know who was responsible for creating it. Like Baby Yoda, for example. Christian Alsman designed Baby Yoda, and he's going to be at Lightbox. You know, so people will come to meet their artists behind their favorite movies, games, animation, illustrations.
All right, so looking at your career and your drive, one of the things I noticed that you say that you're really into and like helping you out and helping you maintain how you work is meditation.
Yes.
So how do you feel that that would apply to other people? Do you think that that's something that works for everyone or?
I hate meditation. So because of that, I feel like it could work for anybody. Why do I meditate? It's because nowadays we don't really have that much downtime. We're always connected to something, right? And there's no time to just veg. And I feel like just sitting there and just blanking your mind is a healthy thing to do, you know, if you do it regularly. It gets rid of a lot of stress. And I found a lot of times my best ideas come right after meditation. And I feel like it's kind of like you empty your mind so that new things can come in.
Coming from like an education background as well, what are two things that you think that most beginner artists could improve on?
Especially for nowadays, I think the biggest breakthroughs come from sitting there and just thinking. If you're constantly looking up the solution and maybe altering it a bit, it doesn't have nearly as much evolution than if you just sat there and just kind of rethought things. Like how would I want to do a big convention for artists? You know, I've been to a lot of them. Do I want to build off of that? Or do I want to just sit there and just think? And that's what I did. I just sat there and thought. You know, same with schoolism. Like, as far as I knew, there was no online art school anywhere. Doesn't mean that there can't be. The second one is to not worry about things that are out of your control. That's been fantastic for me. I just think about, okay, well, what can I affect? That's what I'll concentrate on. If I tried my hardest, I put in the time, I tried to think about it logically, those three things. Logic, effort, time. That's all you can do. And after that, I don't think about it anymore. I move on. And this is especially good when, say, you apply for a job, right? You wonder, oh, did I get it? Oh, I hope they hire me. It's out of your control. So go and do something else and, you know, don't stress over that because there's no point. Yeah. And a lot of times, students especially, or beginner artists, they stress so much. Imagine that you're working on a, you know, $300 million movie now, and Tim Burton's wondering, where is the next design? You know, how stressed are you going to be now when you're stressing over your portfolio to get a, you know, internship? Got to get over that.
Well, as we wrap up, I would love to hear three artists that you're currently really enjoying.
First one that comes to mind is Chaos Dera, because we share the same studio, and I constantly see all the cool stuff that she's working on and constantly blows me away. Another one would be Craig Mullins. He's like the godfather of digital painting. What a rare opportunity to, you know, to know the person that we all kind of deem as the first real badass digital painter, right? And very arguably the best digital painter in the world. That's how, you know? And I guess the last one is Claire Wendling. I've always admired her work. She's brilliant in so many ways. She doesn't use any reference. She just sits in a cafe and does these incredible, beautiful drawings straight out of her head. It's awesome.
It's incredible. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Like, it was a blast having you in Los Angeles. Thank you for making the time to come out. I know you have a super busy schedule, but we really enjoyed having you on the podcast.
My pleasure.
And everyone listening, thank you for joining us. We hope that you enjoyed. Make sure to like the podcast. Make sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe so that you can hear more stuff coming in the future. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye.